This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 439, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Right when I wasn't looking, and all these false impressions leave me with the...
Hey everybody, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 439. My name is Paul Montgomery, and joining me are Connor Kilpatrick.
Was that an Irish joke? Are we making
Is that an epithet?
No, not at all, because I ordered a pizza the other day from a place where I've ordered pizza many times before, and they still think my name is Paul Montgomery. And they write Montgomery on the box. My name is Montgomery. And it defends me because I love them so much. And, you know.
I think we got to go down there and straighten them out.
I think we, yeah.
Something, whatever you said.
Also here, Josh Flanagan.
Yeah.
We are iFanboy. We like comics. And every week, we read a bunch of those comics. One of us picks the best book that we read. We call that the pick of the week. And we talk about it here. We break bread. We enjoy our company.
Whose week was it for the bread?
Who broke my baguette, you mother?
And once you break the baguette, you have to finish it. It's going to go hard. And
Halo.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about bread and carbs. And
it's so delicious, but so fattening.
No.
I don't...
Reading the calories on a given piece of food is the dietary equivalent of reading the comments. Like, it doesn't do anybody any good. No one to know.
Yeah.
And so this podcast is hardly gluten-free. It's also not spoiler-free. We will be talking about the things.
Historically, Connor and my conversations have been about 45%. I think I'm getting fat. I mean, like, we discussed this. Anyway, let's move along.
Well, there is empirical record. Your fat hatred is self-loathing.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I'm an honorary fat guy.
This is a review show. We'll be talking about the things that happened in this week's books, all the people that died, that got impaled with cosmic energy, beheaded is a thing that happened this week. So if you're worried about spoilers, pause the show, come back when the coast is clear. I didn't say, you know, what book someone got beheaded in, so that's okay, hopefully. But anyways, Connor had the pick. What was it?
Well, before I get to that, I wanted to do a quick bit of business from last week's show. We mentioned Rod Rice, the artist on Cowl.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually, I don't know why I kept saying he was the colorist. He's the inker. He's the colorist on Justice League. I kept saying inker. I'd also had some whiskey before that show, so I don't know if anyone had noticed that.
More Irish stereotypes.
Exactly. Also, not related to Ivan Rice.
Wow.
Yeah.
What are the chances that two people... in comics might have the same name and not be related.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Can we confirm that these Romita guys have anything to do with each other?
I don't think anyone's ever confirmed they are. So apologies to Rod Rice, but although we do not apologize for praising your art, which is still fantastic, yes, regardless of those mistakes. Pick of the week, Smallville Lantern 12, and I believe this is our first digital pick of the week.
Ever?
Or at least it's definitely our first DC digital.
Well, not digital, because the Private Eye.
You're right. I'm sorry. But this is our first DC digital pick of the week. DC's been doing these digital books for a long time, since the New 52. So this is our first foray into that realm. And this will probably be a short conversation because I'm pretty sure, not only is the book short, but I'm pretty sure neither you guys are reading it. So
I checked it out because you made it the pick. I said, let's see what's going on, because I like Brian Q. Miller quite a bit.
Of 12, right. So you may be a bit disappointed. What they do now is, for a long time, so Smallville season 11 has been the thing that they've done post the show ending of Smallville, which Paul and I both enjoyed quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And season 11 is still ongoing, much like Buffy season 9, which went for 5 years. But season 11 is still going. And they stopped the sequential numbering and then started breaking it up into storylines, which got its own numbers. So this has been the Smallville Lantern story. This is part 12 of 12, and these are half-issue length stories. So each two of these would be the length of one regular issue. So this Smallville Lantern book will be compiled into a 6-issue length trade when it comes out in paper.
Okay, I read 10, 11, and 12.
Well, you missed a lot of good stuff. Okay. This has been the story that's introduced the Green Lantern mythology into some of the Smallville world. We mentioned this way back, I think, Paul, when Dave was sitting in on the show. Mentioning that this. So we finally have all of the major elements of the DC universe integrated into the Smallville world. In this storyline, the ring finds – it was the ring of the sector that Krypton was a part of, and it finds Kal-El on Earth to be the new Green Lantern of that sector, and then all kinds of craziness ensues. And this particular storyline featured basically everybody in the universe. You had Wonder Woman and the Teen Titans and Batman. And there was a great sequence earlier where the Yellow Lanterns attack Earth and the rings go to find suitable hosts, and they all just go to Arkham Asylum and they all take over all of Batman's villains and they all attack. It was actually a really, really great story. But in this issue, number 12, was basically the epilogue of the story. There was a bit of a climactic battle in the beginning with the big creatures, Parallax, but it really was more about the aftermath. And one thing Brian Q. Miller, who's been writing all these Smallville books and was a Smallville writer and a great comic writer, you recall it was the writer of Batgirl, the Stephanie Brown Batgirl. Mm-hmm. He does really great character stuff. And this particular chapter was mostly the characters coming down from the aftermath. And although also the Justice Society was in the storyline too, as Lex Luthor went to try to figure out how Alan Scott was involved and tried to get his ring from Ma Hunkel, who sent him on his way, would not let him, you know, get that information or get the ring from the JSA headquarters, if you recall from the show. He just writes these characters really well. And this is a Superman that's tons of fun and actually has a really great costume design. If you're looking at redesigned Superman costumes, way better than the one in the DC books right now. And, you know, it doesn't, It's expanded that Smallville world so big that you're not so beholden to the show and the character, and the, you know, they don't look like the actors, which is fine.
The Clark design just looks like it looks more like the Superman the animated series Superman, yes, than exactly. Than Tom Welling.
So it's sort of taken on a life of its own, and the characters are great. And I think one of the things that I was thinking about as reading this, and I actually reread the entire storyline this week just to, because I fall way behind in these digital books because they're so short, I forget about them. Is that, and we talked about this before, I think, Josh, you recall when we talked about the Atom storyline in the Superman Batman book about how that was how to do the reboot. And
yes.
And these are all alternate versions of familiar characters, and they're way more accessible than the ones that we find currently in the yeah. New 52. They're familiar, but they're different, and they're different in interesting ways. I mean, you know, Hal Jordan still exists in this world, and Kyle Rayner did exist, and Guy Gardner, but they're all dead. John Stewart's the main Green Lantern, and it's a familiar John Stewart, but it's a different John Stewart. He's a cop instead of a soldier, and I just think that this world's still really fun. And Paul, even though you only read a part of the story, didn't get the setup and all the things going on, did you feel like this was enjoyable still, or did you?
Yeah, I always love going back to the Brian Q. Miller voice of superhero stories. He writes some of my favorite, especially, you know, within DC Comics, and it's relegated here to the digital first books, with the different direction that they're going with the New 52. So it's always, you know, it's cliche, but it's refreshing. It's a palate cleanser, and it's more fun and more vibrant in a lot of ways. And, I enjoyed it, and I love how sort of expansive it's gotten. You know, you're not limited to the budgets of, you know, a television show, although they did some crazy stuff on the television show. Right. And yet they didn't, the other possibility is that he could drop a lot of, you know, the relationships and the interesting threads from the show in favor of doing all new things, with this huge cast of characters from the comics. And, you know, Chloe's still around. And it's, you know, the Smallville version of Oliver Queen. And it was sort of like a, you know, like a trigger in my head when I saw the character in this different costumery. I was like, wait a minute, who's this? And then he refers to himself as Arrow. And I was like, oh, right, Green Arrow. And then I also had to negotiate.
Take two steps over to the other
one. Yeah, negotiate. But it's not the Arrow that's on TV right now. It's not the one in the comics right now. It's the one from Smallville, which is, you know,
slightly different. Quite a bit different.
He's much more playful and more like the Oliver Queen of, you know, the classic Ollie Queen.
Yeah.
Not super serious Ollie from the comics and the Arrow TV show today.
Did you catch Arya from not Arya, that's Game of Thrones. From the cartoon. Who was that character, the computer character from the cartoon? The Green Lantern cartoon. You watched that, right, Paul?
Oh, yeah. I can't think of the name, but I know what you mean. Yeah.
So her character is one of the background Green Lanterns, and there's a nice little background bit where they have to reboot basically the Green Lantern rings in order to save the day, and so it deactivates everyone's powers. But since she's made up entirely of energy from the rings, she sort of falls apart. And it was a nice little background gag that they didn't refer to overtly, but it was happening in the background, which was funny. He's great, and I think anyone who loved that Batgirl book should be reading this book, especially since whenever Batman makes an appearance in this world, his partner is quote-unquote Nightwing, who is Barbara Gordon here but was originally meant to be Stephanie Brown.
Right.
But it's the same personality, the same character, same kind of dialogue. So if you missed that, she's still alive sort of in the background of Smallville. And it's just really, really fun. And I actually, looking back, and my last pick of the week was Action Comics, so this is my second small Superman pick of the week in a row. And I find myself just craving these Superman stories.
And I like the cliffhanger at the end of this one, where you've got Lex with a whole table full of Yellow Lantern rings, and he's talking about assembling a team, basically.
Yeah. And it's fun. We loved that show for the most part overall, I would say. And it's fun to return to these characterizations and these characters. And I fall behind in these books because I don't like reading smaller chunks. I like reading them all together. So I sometimes just pile them up and forget about them. But reading all this in one sitting was a really great story.
Yeah, you know, and they come out on different days. And we're so used to, you know, reading everything on Wednesday. But this, you know, reading the last three issues at least – it was, you know, simple enough. You know, you hop on there, you read the one issue, and it says you want to read the next one, and you just click a button and, you know, brings up the next one. So it kind of lends itself to, you know, holding off and sort of marathoning them.
And I really like Marcio Takara's art. As you said earlier, the character models aren't necessarily the actors, which is totally fine, but they don't need to be. Mm-hmm. But he's a really sort of solid superhero artist.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
He's great. I'm trying to remember. He was on... I'm trying to remember, one of the Boom Stan Lee books, maybe?
Possibly, but he's really good. And the format of these series are they're all widescreen. They're a single page widescreen. And so you get to play with that more. And he's just a really good artist. And he didn't do this whole arc. I think he did 7 of the 12 chapters or 8 of the 12 chapters. Ig Guerra, the artist from that Avengers Pets book.
Yeah.
He did the other issues of those, look good too. We used to say before that some of the more interesting stuff at DC was happening in the digital books, and I still think that's true for a lot of them, including this one, which is still really fun. So fans of that show, fans of Superman, should check this out. Brian K. Miller fans, it's still a really, really good book.
Oh, no, he did Incorruptible.
Yes.
That's what it was. He did Incorruptible for a while, and then he worked on The Incredibles, and he did Dynamo 5 for a little bit, too.
Yeah, he's really
I like his work a lot.
Yeah. Really solid. Very, and very, and it's a Smallville book whose look sort of evokes the animated series, as Paul said. So it's a nice combination of the two.
Yeah, I remember in the beginning, like, it's clearly they're trying to go for a Tom Welling kind of thing, at least to the level.
Some artists really try to ape the actors, and some artists don't. It doesn't really matter, yeah. As long as the artwork.
Yeah, I don't mind, but it's, you know, it was just interesting seeing that shift.
Yes. So the other book that I thought about for Pick of the Week was Miles Morales: The Ultimate Spider-Man #2. I just like to say the whole title. Bendis is so good with these characters, and this was one of those issues where there was a lot of talking, which was great.
It was interesting that this is it's one of those books where he did like a time jump. He skipped a bunch of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has made it work a lot better.
Right.
A lot of times I think even with Bendis, like in the past, when he does a thing like that, you feel kind of shortchanged. Mm-hmm. I think like he's done time jump stuff where he did it, and then all of a sudden you're like, well, we weren't done with that yet, which is sort of a Sopranos kind of thing that I have. But with this, it worked because originally Miles was so young that I think it was difficult to keep going and stay there. But now, like, him and Genki, like, are a little older.
Well, it allows you more stories you can tell. You can tell romance stuff. Now he's got a girlfriend. It's
without it being weird.
Kate Bishop, right? That's his girlfriend. Is Kate Bishop?
Yeah, but she's not.
Right, but that's his girlfriend.
Right,
but it allows more things you can do with the character now.
Yep.
He's older, but not. He's still not old. He's not an adult still.
Right. Let's see, 15 or 16 here.
Probably, yeah.
That works.
And it also skips over some of the time that he already covered with Peter in Ultimate Spider-Man, getting used to the power set. Like, there's slight differences in their power set, and you know the whole legacy thing, and you know their background. So you get some of that with the initial arcs, and then that time jump allows you to get right into the meat of the story.
This issue looks really good.
It does.
Again, we talked about the art last time and how Peter's floppy hair finally makes sense when Dave Marquez draws it, and it was fine here. This was, if you recall last time, the cliffhanger was that Miles comes home to find Peter Parker in his bedroom. And so now we have the confrontation. Peter Parker wants his web slingers back.
Wants his damn web shooters.
Thanks for the help, kid, but I'm back, so I'll need my web shooters now. And a little physical action here. And so then I really liked the sequence where Miles is like, clone.
There's some really interesting. He's doing some interesting stuff with rhythm in this issue. And when you first start off, you get the Norman Osborn stuff going back to Osborn Industries. It's Osborn Industries, right? Not Oscorp in this, right? So anyways, it's a silent sequence. It's like, oh, is he doing all silent stuff? And then it actually, as you said, it does become. There's a lot of talking in this issue, but there's also a lot like being very playful with the rhythm of that sequence of clones, and he continues to, you know, go farther and farther from that apartment and just saying the one word over and over again. And it's just all sinking in, like, what's going on here? And then you get the great sequence with him and Genki, and Genki saying Tushy, I believe.
Yes.
Which that works for Genki, I think. and
it's just Bendis.
It's Bendis.
Well, it's Bendis, but then
same,
also, like, I buy Genki saying that too.
No, I do,
like,
too.
I think that works for that character.
I'm both excited and dreading the Peter's family finding out about the clone.
Right.
I'm excited from an audience standpoint because it's going to be a great. I assume it'll be a great, moment and lead to great stuff. But also dreading it because I feel so close to these particular characters after 10 plus years that I don't want them to see Peter walking around because I know what's going to happen. So I think that's a great place to put the story into, where you've got all these possibilities to work from, and they're all going to be really good, I think.
Yeah, and in the background, you've got those two characters in armor and not quite sure what they're up to yet. So that's sort of like, you know, coming along in the background. And I don't know if those are related. I don't know what clone Peter is up to. And I like that it continues to be...
Or if he's one of those guys.
Maybe. Right, exactly. Yeah, I was like, oh, maybe he's one of them. And I also wondered, like, you know, you've got two different ones, but they look male, but I don't know if they establish that they're necessarily male. So maybe the other one is female. Just because it's got me thinking about the Jessica Drew character.
Mm-hmm.
And who else, if he was one of those armored characters, who would the other one be? And I like that it continues to be weird that they're attracted to the female Peter Parker, but oh wait, she's a clone of a guy we know, and is that okay? Is that
Listen,
weird?
Hot is hot.
Right.
Right? We can't, you know, we make no judgments about that. Josh's silence is assent.
I'm intentionally noncommittal, you know, like, because there are a lot of different variables.
I couldn't think of a response. I started going through so many things, and by the time that I had started to make headway, and not even anything final, it had been a good number of seconds. Which does not work for audio.
My mind just went out of the room, around the corner to a bookcase with a Michael Shea Bond collection of short stories where there's a guy who's into his cousin at a wedding. So I was like,
these awkward things.
Okay, depending on the state.
So I'm still behind on Superior Foes of Spider-Man. I've started slowly reading it, but I'm not caught up to be current. So that's...
Well, what you would have missed was a number of, I don't want to say fill-in issues because I don't really like that term, but issues by people other than the main people who started this.
Right. It was a little tangent.
Other than Nick Spencer or Steve Lieber. And I thought, oh God, are they done with it? That's what I thought because, you know, I can't imagine this is a huge seller for Marvel,
right?
Or that it's even setting up any sort of financial, you know, anything. Like it's just I don't know why this book exists. I'm very happy that it does, but I mean, realistically, you know, I figure we've only got so long.
Right.
Anyway, I was then pleasantly surprised with the return of Lieber and Spencer to this, and instantly it felt right again. It was fine the last couple of issues. Like it was enjoyable, but this really was the magic.
Yeah, it's a great setup, and you know, other creative teams can come into it and play with it, but this is you know, it's really special. It's like if someone were to, you know, come onto Hawkeye. It's like so, you know, esoteric and weird and sort of specific in terms of its voice that it feels like a creator-owned project. But you know, so you've got Boomerang and Beetle and Overdrive and the other one.
Shocker was
well, Shocker's in there. Who's the Speedster?
I don't.
Anyways,
Quicksilver.
And that sort of says everything you need to know about the tier of villains that are at play in this book. But I also like, and they make comment on the fact that they've sort of been gone for a while. When Beetle says, "Why have we just been standing here for a while?" And because we're just picking up after their previous issue. It's not, you know, that was another story.
Were the flashbacks? Were they of the other stories? Were they flashbacks, or were they? What were they?
They were sort of character studies on individual, members of the team. So sort of out of time kind of thing. So anyways, this continues that very sort of Baroque storyline. Just thinking about it, like it's kind of very hard to explain what is happening, but and in fact, Boomerang explains a lot of his bad behavior away by saying that it was Chameleon the whole time.
But he's lying. He knows he's lying.
Yeah,
it's a very convenient excuse in the Marvel Universe, though. Just blame everything on Chameleon.
Chameleon is already also involved. He's got his fingers in this whole, you know, all these shenanigans. So, you know, Boomerang takes the opportunity and says, you know, all those things where I did stuff that offended you, that was Chameleon at that time. So,
yeah, baby, it was Chameleon.
It was, yeah. And that's very much his personality. And Boomerang has really become a really fascinating character and just a rascal. And the head of Silvermane.
Oh. And my favorite line in this, where at one point, like Shocker's just complaining. He's like, "How is this?" Basically, Hydro Man comes over to watch TV, and he sees the head of Silvio Silvermane, or is it Sil? What is it? The head of Silvermane. And the first scene is like he's already gone and sold Shocker out, you know, because they're all criminals, and they're assholes.
Mm-hmm.
So he's meeting with Hammerhead. Who's trying to be a tough guy and like he keeps reverting back to his early version of just talking like Jimmy Cagney.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this like underlying little storyline where at the end he's like, "Call my therapist immediately," because like the fact that his boss is coming back has tripped sort of the old version of himself, which is sort of a comment on how the comics used to be.
Yeah.
We get Silvermane had my favorite line where Shocker's kind of whining and he's like, "You could be a man!" And then he's like, I love that part of The Godfather. It's good. And it's great, which just made me laugh because I really like The Godfather.
I thought of
also.
You when I got to that line. I was like, Josh, yeah. I love that.
Is the head alive? Is it just the head?
Oh, yeah. No, he's sentient. He's alive. He's a dick.
That sounds very much like Empowered. I don't know if anyone's read that, where there's the alien in that living in the apartment.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But he's like a cybernetic head. Yeah. Yeah.
But he's also an old mobster. Which is great.
I love an old mobster head to be just constantly commenting on my life.
There's one you don't want that. There's one more dual page spread cutaway of the facility they have to break into with all sorts of sight gags, silly sight gags.
Yeah, it's like
and they made me laugh.
I'm sure a lot of people can relate. When you're a kid and you take like a big piece of paper and you draw like your ultimate headquarters or whatever, and it's got all these levels, and this one's got snakes in it, and this one's got pendulum or whatever.
The giant knives. Yeah. Like they just look like knife blades, but they're giant. Then there's a room with a great white shark in it. It's full of water,
and it's got like a submarine hatch door.
nesting dolls, and in the fourth one, there's a giant spider. And then of course, mummy Lenins. Vladimir Ilyich Lenin as a mummy. There are three of them.
It's just it's so fun.
It's very fun.
Yeah.
So take it while you can get it. I think. It's super fun. It's definitely sort of one of the most whimsical books over at Marvel.
What number are we up to with that now?
12.
Well, that seems right, considering the type on the script.
Yep, 12.
So in a similar vein, I wanted to mention Green Arrow 32.
I dropped off this.
Which I was very close to dropping off. I was very excited when they first brought on the new team of Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino. And I just hadn't really been into it all the Outsiders War storyline, which had gone over the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's loading slowly, the cover gallery, 6 issues. And that's the problem with the problem with the modern way of doing comics for the trade is that if you find a storyline you don't like, you're stuck with it for 6 months. Unless you're at Marvel, then it's only a few weeks. And I was so close to dropping this book, which I'd really been enjoying because I didn't like that story, didn't care about it. I don't like everyone having to be a totem of something else. I don't like how he just can't be a guy who got stranded on an island and survived and then came back to fight evil. He's just, now he has to be some sort of part of some grand conspiracy war thing. I don't like how they're constantly doing that to characters. But this issue was sort of a return to form in that storyline's over. Oliver's back in Seattle and back to fighting crime. And it sort of felt like, oh, this is what I wanted to read this book about. I don't necessarily love his supporting cast other than Diggle, who I love from the show, but I do love this book. Continues to be wonderfully drawn. There's some great flashback sequences here that are made to look like old comic pages, which I know it's an old trick, but it's a good trick because it really does work. It gives you that instant feeling of it being in the past. And so there's a bunch of flashbacks which are very sort of silhouette heavy in terms of the character work, but you can see behind them in the color the texture of the pages, which was great. Andrew Sorrentino is really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was always really happy with the art. It's just after a while, I was just bored.
It wasn't going. Yeah, if you liked the story beforehand, just, you know, Green Arrow being Green Arrow, this is a return to that, at least for right now. But Green Arrow is a great character. It is
at the end of the day, though. Wow, this is like I really do miss what Green Arrow was. Like, this is a different character as far like it's, and it's fine. I kind of like it. It's okay, but I don't really feel like I need to spend a ton of time with it because it's not Oliver Queen that I really liked.
It's Oliver Queen very much the show, and if you're a fan of the show, then it's very much like spending more time with that kind of work.
It's essentially it's young Bruce Wayne, basically. It's like a year one Bruce Wayne,
but with a bow.
With a bow, right?
Listen, he's like Batman, but he's got light hair. And instead of a Batmobile, he's got a bow.
Like a Spider-Mobile. Arrow-mobile he had, didn't he?
You know, and then it's the same thing that happened with, you know, Hawkeye in the movies, too. Ugh. Like, it's for some reason the archers, they said maybe it's such a silly idea that they have to use, you know, a bow and arrow. We've got to make them, like, military grade.
Well, what's interesting is that the thing that made both of those characters like, obviously the first thing that anyone's going to say about either of those characters is like, what is he doing? He's way outmatched. You know, he doesn't belong there. And so the thing that always pulled me over the edge with them and was that they had personalities and they were plucky.
Right. Uh-huh. Circus not folk.
Supposed to be a pun. Well, Carnies. No, but like, and they had that force of will, and with it that came that attitude, and that explained why they were there. And for some reason, like, they don't think that that works in a mass media context, which is weird to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because it should. I know lots of people who've liked it. I know I did. Or, you know, who knows?
Well, speaking of things changing because of the mass media, Original Sin number 3, Paul, this was the issue that I both loved and hated and may have driven me off. I was actually really digging this book way more than I thought I would up until this point because – Jason Aaron is such a master of tone and balancing really silly giant cosmic adventures with really great grounded character work. And that's what he's been doing in this series up to this mini series event or whatever you want to call it up until this point. But in issue 3 is the moment I've been dreading in which Nick Fury or old original real Nick Fury is murdered in the most Game of Thrones-esque brutal
crazy
way.
Crazy murdered. Yeah. He's red weddinged.
He gets
stab, what is he shooting him with?
I don't know. Josh, did you read this also? Or is it?
No. I did go back and read the scene with the meat. And that was exactly everything you said it should be.
Yeah.
And then I stopped. I was like, nope.
That's
a good
memory to hold on to. Hold on to that scene because
I love that.
In this issue, some switch gets flipped in Winter Soldier. He goes back in a boom tube to where Nick Fury is, shoots Nick Fury in the chest.
With like a blaster rifle.
Shoots him in the hand as Fury reaches for a gun, takes out a machete, cuts his head off, and holds it up high. So
I don't even think it's a machete. I think it's like a Bowie knife or something. Machete. Like
the last image of this issue, unless you've got the digital version, and there's an infinite story, which threw me off because I saw there was 97 pages in this, and I was very confused.
Wow.
Is Nick Winter Soldier holding up the severed eye of the Watcher and the severed head of Nick Fury.
And he's holding him by the hair.
No more secrets. And I was like, I'm out. I am out.
He's Tim Robbins in Mystic River. No more secrets.
He's Robert Redford in Sneakers. Who literally says no more secrets. So, it's fun, but I don't want it.
Right, it's what I like about it is that it's unpredictable.
Well, it's completely fun and silly. I take away that last bit, and I've really been enjoying how kind of over the top it is, but still works from a character standpoint.
It's probably I think my enjoyment of it, which I don't love it. My enjoyment of it is on a meta level where I'm just thinking about Jason Aaron doing the big Marvel event and he puts the orb in there, like his big giant eyeball character. And while I'm not wild overall about the way Diodato's drawing the book, it's got that uncanny valley, you know, photo referencey thing and really heavy inks and just like lower the contrast down just a little bit. I the way he draws the orb and just that giant unblinking eyeball is just the creepiest thing ever. And he's himself carrying around us, you know, an eyeball with, you know, these tendrils leading out of it. And basically they say that the Watcher, his eyes function like DVRs.
They store all everything you see. So once the eyeballs were severed and activated, they basically like a grenade released all their secrets into the minds of the people around it. So in the beginning of this issue, a bunch of the heroes get a bunch of secrets revealed to them and they run off crying and screaming. I mean, they must have been secrets about the century, I assume. But,
well, those are the secrets that are going to be explored in the various, Captain America doesn't say what the secret is that is revealed to him, but it's going to be that he was betrayed by the other Illuminati and they, you know, erased his memory, you know, back when Hickman started on that book.
Right.
So all the different things that are going to be explored. The Hulk remembers that Iron Man or Tony Stark was responsible for the gamma surge that created he remembers that the Planet Hulk thing, but apparently Tony caused the gamma radiation that created the Hulk in the first place.
Yeah. Well, so like I that. Just don't want any of this anymore, so yeah. I'm done on this.
Okay.
I don't want it.
I don't need Nick Fury's head getting hacked off and held aloft like a trophy so that we can have Samuel L. Jackson in the Marvel Universe.
I just want to see where it goes with it. I mean, objectively, I'm not super into the story, but it's just so out there that I kind of want to follow along. But I do like the weird combinations of characters, like Punisher and Doctor Strange.
I do like that. I mean, we mentioned it before. I think it's super fun. Up until the last scene, I was really digging it.
I like the Moon Knight has his own spaceship, you know, right. and he and Gamora and Bucky are flying around, and they see shell casings, loose shell casings floating in space.
It has the hallmark of the Jason Aaron who writes Thor. You know, there's a big galactic ideas. You know, this was a guy with a giant gun trying to kill a planet. So they follow his trail of shell casings through space until they find, you know, the source. I mean, those are all great, fun ideas. The premise hurts me, so I'm done. In fact, I'm deleting it from my iPad right now.
It's done.
Let's take a brief and awkward break to talk about
whenever you want.
If you wanted to buy an iPad,
how to help iFanboy. Now, I realize this is a big topic. We mentioned this last week. It's only getting bigger. You should not take this little segment as a endorsement of anything that's going on right now. Rather than this is, if you are still a patron of Amazon and would like to help iFanboy, this is a way you can do it. This is not an endorsement of any corporate practices. But if you are still using Amazon, iFanboy.com/Amazon is a place to make your purchases and helps the show out. We get a little piece of the sale.
And Shed had it coming.
And I don't endorse that statement either. So if you want to help us out and you're still using Amazon, that is certainly a place to do it. Another way, if you don't want to use Amazon anymore, but you have been helping us out that way and you want to do something different, iFanboy.com/registration is a way you can become an iFanboy member. And for $3 a month or $30 a year, you can help us out directly. You can also make a donation there of any amount you want. So that is our awkward break for how you can help us help the show, keep the show going. Keep us in new microphones. In the meantime, here's a book I didn't expect.
Get new microphones? Because I got a dent in this one.
We have been telling you to get a new microphone for a long time, but you don't listen.
Dents are okay, I think.
You know who listens? Jeff. Jeff gets new microphones when we suggest he should get one. I never expected to see Big Trouble in Little China on the rundown, but here we are.
I have the song in my head.
Yeah, so
but I don't remember any of the song except like those words.
So my buddy and Fuzzy Typewriter co-host David Ocampo put me on to watching finally Big Trouble in Little China. I think I watched it for the first time last year, and he was really big into the comic and to the point that he like emailed me, did you check this out? I was like, okay, I'll check it out. So Big Trouble in Little China, number one, it's from Boom. The story is by John Carpenter and Eric Powell with, you know, being actually written by Eric Powell. Artist is Brian Chirilla. And this picks up directly after, you know, the movie left off and, you know, with Jack Burton driving off. So it's he's driving off and he's got that crazy orangutan looking Chewbacca demon that Lopan summoned. And basically since he killed Lopan, the demon is now like Chewbacca, has a life debt to him, and basically he controls that creature and he's, you know, cuddly around Jack, but he can be ferocious when some ninjas attack at a wedding. And the thing that's so cool about this is if you love that movie, if you like the voice of that, if you love what they were doing and the really heightened dialogue, it's all carried over here. I think it's perfectly matched. It's the voice is down completely, and it's just fun and zany stuff, and to the point that they're making fun of the fact that one of the characters is named Wang. Because one of Lopan's lieutenants who isn't killed in the movie, shows up a little bit too late to the party and he wants to gather some artifacts. And basically, he tells Jack that you've got to go find these artifacts or else I'm going to kill your buddy, whose name is Wang. And I've got Wang on the brain. So it's weird jokes like that, but
not the only one, buddy.
Who doesn't have Wang on the brain?
Who doesn't? But yeah, so this, I thought this was kind of,
is this a mini? What is this?
That's a good question. I think it's just an ongoing. It says number one, doesn't say of.
Should be ongoing trouble in Little China.
Yeah, they've got, I mean, they've got some great covers by Joe Quinones and
Turd Didn't Gabe Hartman do one?
Might have.
I saw him post something on Twitter.
Maybe not for the first one.
Cyclops number 2. I'm really enjoying this book.
This book's great.
Yeah. For a book I wasn't necessarily going to read in the beginning, I'm really glad I did because
it's really good and it doesn't feel like typical Rucka. And I hope that doesn't sound as sort of limiting as it is, but it feels like a different sort
of
thing.
It's a bit more fun than a typical Rucka book.
I don't feel like he's done a lot of stuff, but it's at the center of it. It's a father-son story and the awkwardness and the impending crash that's coming, like the tension from that.
The secrets that the dad has, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like he hasn't really done a ton with that, and it's interesting.
Cyclops needs pirate clothes. He's walking around alien worlds in his jeans and his little button down, and he's got a sword.
Polo shirt buttoned up to the top.
And he needs some proper pirate gear because I can't take him seriously. Because, Paul, you will appreciate it. Even though Cyclops is off being a space pirate, he still dresses like a hall monitor.
He does. He really does.
And, well, he's dressed he's like characterized a hall monitor that way. In the 80s. He or also, just sort of a,
like I like
a,
that.
Like a hipster J. Crew kind of thing going on now.
Yeah, right. I like that there's attention to, you know, the culture that he's from without going too over the top with it. Because also Cyclops, you know, because Scott wouldn't be totally up on the times anyway.
Also buttoned all the way to the neck.
All the way to the neck. Right?
That's exactly. That just screams neo-Nazi to me. You heard it here.
Or Sherlock.
He also says, I haven't the foggiest.
He would say that.
Exactly.
I think this is really fun. Fun of Cyclops aside, I think the father-son adventure in space is a great place to explore. I was not in favor of this particular development in the beginning when they announced it, but now I'm all on board. And I feel like
it's going to make me cry.
Yeah.
Well,
it's going to be. It is. It's
clearly Corsair. That's his name, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is sick or something. He's secretly injecting himself with some medicine, and really the whole impetus of this adventure and this issue was to go get him some more medicine secretly. While he distracted his son with the hot alien girl. Go talk to her or I talk to this guy for no reason.
Well, I talked to Jabba for a minute.
Yeah. So
clearly
it's going to be a sad moment. But this is really, really good. And I hope they get to continue and Rucka gets to tell his story on it. And because I like it a lot.
Russell Dowdeman, really, really good. Yeah. Really like the art quite a bit.
It's a nice pairing with Dave Marquez in the same week. These books come out the same week usually and they're very similar styles. Earth 2, number 24. We now enter the third year of Earth 2, and I'm really enjoying the world building going on. And we have had some indications that we're going this way, mostly because they've announced that the world's finest book is changing main characters to the Superman and Batman of Earth 2. And in this issue, I don't know if those characters are going to be the old ones or the new ones, but in this issue, we meet the new Superman, who is a Kryptonian like Kal-El, but was trapped underground, much like the Superman of that Elseworlds story in which he was skinny and he was not exposed to sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually many Elseworlds stories now that I think about it. But
maybe I'm a Kryptonian. I don't know it.
Could be. And so this one, he finally is – he's a pacifist. Hey, maybe you are. He's a pacifist Kryptonian. Doesn't want to use his powers to fight the parademons who are wrecking the Earth, and which pisses off Batman, who is Thomas Wayne. And in this issue, Jimmy Olsen finally convinces him to start to help, and his clothes are all tattered. Jimmy says, you need some new clothes. So he takes them off and reveals he's got a costume underneath it with the S symbol. So that's where we're going with this. And it's, again, much like Smallville, it's an alternate take on these characters, but it's a really fun one. And I still enjoy this really wacky adventure we've got going on Earth 2. And this issue, Eddie Barrows drew it, and he managed to make some of the more outlandish costumes, like the Flash one, look not so outlandish, which was nice.
There are some weird costumes in there.
Yeah. Moon Knight,
number 4.
This, you may remember, if you go back to the beginning of this, we've all been very complimentary of the art in this book and some of the concepts, but I think maybe a little bit, no, it's very cool, but doesn't make you really feel very much. I think, though, that this is the issue, ominously, I guess, that sort of convinced me. I got to the end of this, and I was like, this is great. Really? Mainly because of the ending.
I didn't like this at all.
I loved it, and I loved how it stopped. And I know that, like, it kind of looked like it was a cop-out, and I know that There was a bunch of really surreal stuff. I thought it was really, I don't know, it worked for me completely. It was just very succinct, and I loved the ending of it.
Paul, where do you fall on this?
I'm somewhere in the middle. I think this is my favorite issue so far, just in terms of a single unit story.
Yeah.
It's tricky, you know, because like, it seemed like in, you know, in the first issue that this was leading into there would be these little episodes, but then also there was something going on in the background in terms of his identity.
But there's not.
And the spirit, but there's only going to be six by Warren Ellis and Declan Shalvey. Jordy Belair is staying on past that, and Declan's doing some covers, like he did the cover for number 7, which looks awesome. But yeah, it's going to be a new creative team for the most part.
Brian Wood and some Smallwood something?
Yes.
I forget.
Brian Wood and Smallwood?
I believe that's the other artist's name, but I could be wrong.
So,
also, it might be Karen Silkwood. I don't know. That would be.
But I like this in terms of a. It felt like a Tales from the Crypt, like a little, or like an eerie or creepy story, yeah. You know?
I just like at the very end, credits roll. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
You're right. It is Smallwood.
Yeah. That didn't strike me until
Greg
I said both of those names out
Brian
loud.
Wood and Greg Smallwood.
Yep. He's. I would presume he's not as tall as Brian Wood.
He's a smaller Wood.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought this was also the... I don't want to say it was the strongest art of the series because the art's been really strong, but it was like there was... It had a different feel to it, I guess.
I'd
it was much
it,
more textured.
Yeah, I'd put it... You know, the first issue I thought was really, really strong... I put it, you know, up there with that. These two are my favorite, I think, in terms of story and art. I like the creepy idea of this guy is buried in the floor and he's half dead and he's got these dream spores coming out and people are breathing them in and having joint, you know, memories. And that's kind of, it's such a cool out there idea that, and so high concept that, that's sort of enough, you know, like you don't need to explore it anymore.
I came out of this issue, you know, I've always liked Declan Shalvey's work, obviously. But like I came out of this and I was like, oh, he's going to be the next Chris Somney. That's like how I feel his career arc is going to go. Although he's taking a bunch of time off to do different things now after this. But
I don't know. Like, I don't know if he can be as prolific. I think one of the things about Somney that made him so successful is he was suddenly everywhere.
Yeah.
And Shalvey is not.
Well, it can be if he wants to be. I think he's definitely got. I think he's got the goods for it. It's about.
He also isn't going to a superhero book.
Yeah.
I think he's going to stay sort of great niche artist for right now.
That's fine by me.
There's nothing wrong with it.
I'm cool with whatever Declan wants to do. Enjoy it all.
I'm saying he's very, very good.
Yeah. No, he's great.
I just wish you wouldn't say that he wasn't as good as he is, Connor.
I didn't say that. I said the story. I said his art looked great.
I think we all know what you read between those lines. I think we know where it's going to go.
Wait, he is Irish, isn't he?
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Oh, God? Are you now exclaiming towards the superior monkey? Is that your new God?
I'm an apist.
He's an ape. He's not a monkey.
Those
I subscribe to apism.
Those are the superior monkey is more fun to say than
you see that Dawn of the Planet of the Apes poster?
I saw the trailer. The trailer is awesome. Those are the books we're going to talk about this week. Go to ifanboy.com. /slash comments for some reason. ifanboy.com. So the comments section of this show, you can talk about these books or other books of the week or anything else to talk about or whatever you want to talk about. If you want to talk about Josh's problem with the Irish or the fat or monkeys.
I am Irish.
He's partially all of those things. You can go to ifanboy.com. Now, Paul is getting in early like a good little student.
Yep.
Getting his work in early for the book of the month. No procrastinating here.
If any of my teachers, if any of my professors from college are listening, they're guffawing right now. Get something in early. always an email at 11:59. Okay.
Connor and I...
we did used to edit your work, Paul, too. So we would also have commiserating stories with your teachers when we were your editors at iFanboy. So.
Yeah, Connor and I are so old that we don't have any teachers who would remember us.
Right.
In any way.
We also did an email in our homework.
All right, for the book of the month for June of 2014, I chose a book that is orange. It's very orange on the cover. It's a beautiful European-style album, so a little bit wider than the standard comic book. Lovely hardcover collecting.
Is it Winnie the Pooh?
Yes, it's Winnie the Pooh.
It'd be awesome if it was Winnie the Pooh.
A. Milne, is that right?
Chubby, yeah. Chubby
Josh would hate Winnie the Pooh.
Sanderson read above the door.
Josh should tell Winnie the Pooh too many carbs. And slim down.
It's honey. It's all he eats.
Sugar.
I love that book. I've been reading it to myself.
Oh, what is the book of the month?
Book of the month is called The Love Bunglers by Jaime Hernandez. And I think the title is almost enough to make it the book of the month. I love the title, The Love Bunglers. And basically, this is the culmination of like over 30 years of storytelling in the locus portion of the Love and Rockets story. They've been doing this since 1982. And
so this is a Love and Rockets collection.
This is a Love and Rockets collection, yeah. This was, I believe, originally serialized in Love and Rockets News Stories, which they've been coming out with over the past few years. It's like 100 pages per. And anyways, this is a little bit over 100 pages, but it functions as a standalone graphic novel.
Wait,
even if
is this
never...
in the same format as those other collections? Is that why you said orange? Because the other collections had very like single color palette covers, like the red and blue collections.
Those are those are like the paperbacks.
Yeah,
the big thick paper. No, those are. I mean, this will probably eventually land in one of those. But I guess it's a single storyline, so it's in a hardcover that's I think it's like 112 pages or something like that. 110 pages, yeah. And it's black and white cartooning, and of course, probably are familiar with Jaime Hernandez and Love and Rockets, and that great combination of like you know 80s and 90s indie style and like a Sunday newspaper comic strip. And basically, this is the culmination of Maggie's story. If you're familiar with Maggie the Mechanic, and Maggie and Hopi. Hopi appears in here, but this is really Maggie's story. And she's in her 40s at this point. Hernandez has followed her from, you know, her teenage years and when she became her claim to fame is she was a mechanic at a very young age and she got a little write up in a newspaper. And so she was known as Maggie the Mechanic. This story takes place in the 40s, while she's in the 40s, while she's in her 40s, but then also flashes back to her childhood when her family moved with her father getting a new job. Her father ends up having an affair and she discovers it and brings this to her mother's attention. And her mother doesn't take it very well, obviously, but she also kind of blames Maggie. She's like, why did you tell me this? And they end up
come of that bad choice.
Yeah, and she ends up having to move. They all move back to their original hometown, and we've seen a little bit of some of those stories throughout the locus stories in Love and Rockets, since 1982. But this is all sort of tying it all together. We kind of see without giving anything away, without giving too much away, at least we see who Maggie ends up with. This has been sort of a really long, sort of soap opera over the decades, where she's, been with different partners and, different people probably have a different idea of who she, might end up with or how she should be, happiest, or even what career she should end up in. I mean, there's been wrestling, there's been, punk rock, and at this point, she's basically a landlady of an apartment complex, and it deals with her siblings. She was the eldest. Her brother. It's pretty early on in the story, so he was involved with some older kids in this new town that they moved to when the dad got a job, and he became sexually abused over a period of time, and that really, adversely affected him. And so that goes on into his adult life. And that plays a role in this story as well. But basically this is the sort of the height of Maggie's story. And a lot of threads get tied up, which may surprise a lot of people because it's one of those stories. It's one guy doing the story of, several characters, but primarily Maggie over, 30 years. And you kind of, expect that to just go on forever. I don't know if that's just the end of his time with the Maggie character. It's certainly a nice bow to the end of her story. So it could end there, or it could go on. I don't know. But It's I would consider it his Maggie opus.
Cool. I've tried so hard to get into Love and Rockets. I've never been able to. I've read a bunch of them.
Yeah.
They look great. The art is
wonderful. Beautiful cartoon. The level of cartooning in here is insane. And it's not like insane, you know, crazy inventive layouts or anything. It's very simple and minimal.
But
and
it's deceptively simple. It's really wonderful character cartoon work. It's not like Neil Adams layouts or anything, but it's really great work. And they tell really great stories. I read the whole Maggie Mechanic re-release that came out that was all hyped up a few years ago, and I just wasn't – it's not for me for whatever reason, but I do like looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Last year I sat down, I said, this is going to be my Love and Rockets year, and I read up all those collections. You can go on the Fantagraphics website, and they have a good guide as to where do I start with this. If I just want to read, you know, the Jaime Hernandez stuff, the Locust stuff, or do I want to read his brother Gilbert stuff, which is Palomar and Luba and her family? They show you sort of like the path, which way you can go. And since it's been like collected into different versions, you know, you might get a little confused. So go to Fantagraphics and look at their – they have a whole Love and Rockets section. And it's really helpful and explains, you know, everything.
Cool. So that is the June book of the month for my fanboy, The Love Bunglers by Jaime Hernandez.
Yeah. And even if, you know, you're like, that sounds really daunting, this whole 30 years of Love and Rockets thing, you could pick up just this and enjoy it and it will make sense. It tells a complete story. It refers to characters, but any novel does that.
Mm-hmm. You're really taking in some of the classics lately.
I think so. Yeah, I'm reading a lot of black and white stuff this year, and it's just
ain't no thing with that.
I'm having a lot of fun. And
who's next
on
this?
Huh?
Me.
You?
Yeah.
You hear the
look for that at the end of July.
Did you hear the resignation of my voice? Me. Yeah. Better not be the end of July. I'll be out of town.
You don't even have to write a review now.
But come on.
I actually already have one picked out, so it'll be it'll be on time.
Well, come on, The Love Bunglers. What a great name!
It's a good name.
It's true.
Let us do an audience question while we still have time before we get out of here. Emails from Monica, who writes, says, "I was thinking about comics and sports. I've seen biographical comics about athletes, licensed comics about the NFL, but it seems sports and comics don't mix. Is that because there isn't an audience for them? Also, is the iFanboy staff excited about the World Cup?" And I was thinking, because there are comics. I have got a bunch of baseball comics.
Baseball,
I've got a Roberto Clemente comic and I got a Satchel Paige biography comic, and I was thinking about it after reading this email, looking at my shelf, and the hard thing is that my initial reaction is, well, because sports is so fluid and visual that it's hard to represent, but at the same time, superhero comics are all about fighting and that's fluid and visual. So I don't know why one doesn't translate like the other does.
Okay. Let me take a stab at this. I think that if you look at sort of what comics tends to do best, historically, obviously there are exceptions, but it does a lot of fantastical things and imagination things where that you wouldn't necessarily see in real life a lot. Whereas sports are very real. It's a thing that exists, and I feel like while there is crossover in the audience, there's not necessarily crossover in those things. Now, that being said, I like a good sports story.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody mentioned something about something. I was listening to a story on NPR about a specific kind of pitch the other day, and it was like an arcing. You might know what this is called.
Pitch.
Yes, exactly. See, I knew you'd know. And hearing that story instantly made me want to go back and watch Ken Burns Baseball again, which I've watched through a few times. Now, I don't like sports. I don't watch baseball. But I love sports stories. Now, I think that comics is ripe to tell those kinds of stories very easily. And we've seen it. It happens. There was the
21, the Roberto Clemente story was a book of
exactly.
the month. We had the Golem's Mighty Swing was sort of a fantastical baseball
story. That guy,
story.
James, I forget his last
Sturm.
Sturm's done a bunch of baseball books.
Yeah. I have a Satchel Paige biography book that a book publisher put out for all ages. They're in there, and it's. I do find it. I think for me, the problem tends to be that the physicality of sports is hard because it's so specific. It's not like someone throwing a punch or a kick or you know, some sort of other physical action. If baseball players don't look like they're baseball players, if they're not crouching the right way, or you know, the motion of throwing the pitch is all off, then it really takes me out of that story really quickly. It seems to be hard for some artists who aren't used to that kind of actions to draw them convincingly.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the same way, I mean, it's very simple. If I'm a comic book artist, and somebody's like, "Will you draw this football team?" I'd be like, "Ugh."
A lot of equipment and shit to draw.
It's just people. It's like huge stacks of people. Basketball is kind of the same way. They're in a stadium, so they're surrounded by the, like, it's. I don't know that's all that much fun to draw when a lot of people who sign on to draw comics.
A lot of perspective stuff that you have to do.
Yeah, like it's kind of.
Although we were talking last week about the football scene in Southern Bastards that Paul really liked.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
I just thought it was interesting because I've rarely seen that angle.
Which ties back into this.
There's probably some element, and I know that the world is not bifurcated like this, but there's probably some element of, you know, the jocks do the sports and the nerds do the comics, you know, and I don't mean that even in a bad way. It's just that I think that those sort of plates are separate a little bit. And there's obviously been crossover things, and there's never been like a breakout sports comic to make people go, "Oh, we should do that."
Well, I think partially
breakout zombie comics.
There's no breakout non-genre comics. And that's actually the wrong way to say it, because those are genre books. There's not like a sports book. There's also not a romance book. There's also not a Western anymore.
Well, I think sports stories and not a typical American sports guy. I love watching the Olympics. She asked about the World Cup. I've tried getting into football/soccer. The field's too big is the problem. The camera's too far away.
I used to love when I worked with Brits exclusively and World Cup or Euro Cup came along. I used to love watching it with them. I remember the most fun I ever had watching a sporting event was I was in Ireland and there was a qualifying round with Ireland for the World Cup. And I watched it like in a pub on the west coast of Ireland. And that was super fun.
Yep.
But if I was to sit here at home and pretend I try to care about it, I haven't been able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So Monica, your question is, are we excited? Clearly these two aren't, but I am, and Fanboy co-founder Ron Richards is also excited. I remember actually the last World Cup watching the U.S. game, the famous Landon Donovan game at Ron's apartment in San Francisco. So I will be very excited.
I'm excited for you guys. I'm excited. You know, a bunch of my friends are really into football.
I don't know what I'm looking at.
Yeah,
I don't have any context.
It's a very interesting comment you made, Paul, about how the lack of intimacy in the camera angle.
That's the thing. Yeah, it's so far out, and like if it were like, you know, on a playground basketball court, like, and it was, you know, like six guys or something, like, and the camera was right in there, then I could feel the, you know.
Tell you what, running up and down that thing is no fun.
Well, that's one of the things I think is interesting about it. In sort of contrast to what Paul said. Is that it feels really big to me, and I can feel like they're working really hard the whole time.
They are,
but you know the gains are so few and far between that it can either be constantly exciting or constantly boring. It's kind of not either one or the other, but that's no different than other sports.
Right? When I started playing soccer again as an adult post college, I was in a small league where it was six on six, and it was a really small field, and that was fine. But one year we started to try playing a full size league, and I was like, "Fuck this!" I was
it's huge.
I can't run like this anymore. Are you crazy?
And it's like a I'll civil war battle.
I tell you what, sports is on this weekend. The World Cup UCI downhill bike race in Fort William in the UK.
A nerd
returning downhill champion Steve Smith. Back on the bike after breaking his ankle in the early season. Pretty exciting.
You made all of that up, including the name Steve Smith, which is a really boring sort of fake name to make up.
He has a mustache. He's Canadian, and no Canadian has ever won the downhill championship before last. Actually, the second place was a guy named G. Atherton. So I don't know how you figured that out, but it's pretty amazing.
So West Wing reference.
Well, thank you, Monica, for writing us in. And she wrote in at contact@ifanboy.com. And she could have also called in a question at 888-FANBOY, which is 326-2697. If she had done that, she should have told us who she was and where she was from. It kept it around 30 seconds. And to get on the show, and thank you. You can do that every week to get into the show.
Sports!
Until I fanboy. It was a good question.
It was a good question. And I will say a good sports, and I think it's sort of, they lend them more, themselves more towards self-contained graphic novels than, you know, an ongoing
yes.
thing.
Oh, totally.
And yes. it's more about writing about athletes instead of a sport, I think. Well, that could vary,
I
guess.
That's interesting about sports, ultimately, I think.
Is the people. So the Andre the Giant book just came out from First Second.
That's not sports. That's entertainment.
It's sports. It's sports entertainment, I guess.
Theater.
If you were to do the Ty Cobb graphic novel, I would be first in line.
What about Kennesaw Mountain Landis?
Kennesaw. So we're just doing assholes now?
Well, it depends on the stories.
Fine, no, it's true. Cap Anson's book?
I could do Honus Wagner.
Who was the
other guy from that era?
Well, Walter Johnson?
Yes, Walter Johnson. Yeah. There you go. I could do a Walter Johnson book. That'd be great.
Let's do a special edition podcast on that.
I like sports writing that people have never heard of.
You also so like read smaller... sports.
Have you ever watched Ken Burns Baseball?
No.
I'm not kidding. You would love it.
Yeah?
I could not stop watching it. It's on Netflix.
Baseball's tricky for me, but I could check
it out. It's all great stories, and it's old-timey, Paul, and you love it.
Yeah, those. I mean, like, it loses some of its...
The more recent it gets, the less interesting it becomes.
Yeah, but then you have the context of sort of what the country was going through at the time, which to me makes it interesting. It's history.
No, what
it's,
I mean is once the story gets past the 60s,
yes,
I find it less interesting. 70s yes. and 80s, I was like, okay.
But the 20s and the 1800s, yeah. It's fascinating. It's so fascinating.
So thank you, Monica, for exposing this secret desire in Josh to learn about baseball.
Yeah.
Quick plug, the X-Men Days of Future Past show is still out there. If you have seen the movie, want to listen to me and Paul and the return of Ron Richards to the podcast, mm-hmm. talk about X-Men Days of Future Past.
You still have time to listen before it returns to the vault.
Right. We're going to put it in the vault like Disney and bring it out again. So thank you if you've done that, because if you have, you are one of the people that contributed to one of our over 8 million downloads. We used to track these pretty closely and post about it on the website, but since we stopped posting, I stopped tracking it. But sometime in the last couple of months, we blew past 8 million downloads on across our family of audio podcasts. So we thank you, everyone who's listened, who's downloaded, has streamed it. You're listening right now. You're one of those people. We thank you very much. I think it's safe to say when Josh and Ron and I started, the idea that we would have 8 million downloads was laughable. So we really appreciate that, everyone. Josh, do you agree, or did you have always in your mind?
I was just going to say, suck it around comics. So, wanted to go ahead and get that in there.
Head over to ifanboy.com, come on this show, talk about this week's books, find all other podcasts. Let's get to 9 million.
There's people out there that don't know we're really good friends with those guys and just think we're huge dicks.
Right.
Both those things are true.
So I would like to get to 10 million before the next year. By the time we're in 2015, let's get to 10 million. So ifanboy.com, that's where you find this show, all of our other shows. You can comment there. You can talk about this week's books. You can find our special edition shows. Our movie podcast will be coming up with Guardians of the Galaxy soon enough. And that'll be a fun time. Fun, sexy time for everybody.
All right.
If it's what a fun, sexy time you'll have. You can, if it's not happening on the social networks, it may as well not be happening. So that's why you could follow ifanboy at twitter.com/ifanboy, or you go to facebook.com/ifanboy. Or individually, you could follow us at J.A. Flanagan, C.S. Kilpatrick, or Fuzzy Typewriter. Those are the three.
Paul, we had a naming convention.
Sorry.
And you didn't follow it.
Yeah. Yes, I guess there's really nothing to be done about that.
Yeah. So finally, if you dig this sort of thing, write us a review in iTunes. Better yet, tell people about it when you're at your next sports game.
Don't make those dumb sports ball jokes.
I didn't say sports ball. I said when you're at
tell the goalie that he got a three-pointer.
I was trying to be as expansive as possible.
I understand.
You're not at a match. You're not at whatever. You're at a sport outing. You're sporting goods store. Tell people about iFanboy.
You're
all the fun you have.
Let me ask you something. Do you like comics?
So
that's a nice set of skates there. So now, have you ever really thought about Green Arrow?
Paul, before we go, how's your homework coming?
I just got, just in time for them to announce like a new 30th anniversary version, I just got the Ghostbusters on Blu-ray remastered in 4K. So I'll be watching that this evening.
You have a 4K TV?
Do you have a television that will work on?
No, but it apparently looks better than the regular version. There is, apparently, according to Blu-ray.com, there is an uptick in quality.
So you're upset that you didn't get a better version, a newer version with more stuff on it of a movie that you have no history or affection
for? I just
for.
Thought it was funny that I ordered it, and then like the next day they announced one that's got like a maquette in it. And, you know, I don't.
You don't need that.
I don't.
You're still in the whole DVD marketing thing then.
Huh?
People love the people around here love those maquettes. Love those specials.
I mean, like, I went through that for a long time where I was like, I got to get the one that has the three commentaries and the special case. And I still don't know where to put that
case. You know, I like stuff with, you know, commentaries and stuff. I like the special features, but I don't necessarily care about. Yeah, I do.
I dropped off at some point. I love them, but I didn't.
Especially in TV shows. I'll more often listen to an episode of a TV show with a commentary on. Not because
I need a Blu-ray player by my computer. That would help.
All right. Well, Paul blew the deadline. Now I feel very much like your teachers in college that are your professors.
But I was early with the book of the month.
Yeah, well.
Well, it's about priorities here.
It's orange.
And one of them is Bill Murray.
Yeah.
So next week we'll find out. Or maybe you'll do a Fuzzy Typewriter show.
I am going to do a podcast about it. I've been told.
Yeah. So we'll do that.
I mean, we can't talk about it?
We can talk about it, yeah.
All right.
I don't care.
All right. Until Paul finally does his homework, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And the flowers are still standing.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.